The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Well, I will be talking flying in a moment, but first of all, I want to mention our competition. Aer Lingus have launched their January sale with fantastic deals on flights to Europe, to Britain and to North America. And to celebrate, we're giving you the chance to win a trip for two to a European destination of your choice, plus 5 nights accommodation in a 4-star hotel. For more information on those January offers, check out aerlingus.com. So every day we're going to send one qualifier through to our draw on Friday to win that holiday. To be in with a chance to go into Friday's draw, we have this European trivia question for you. Which is the largest of the Canary Islands? If you know the answer, text the word fly with your answer name to us now, 5216, at a cost of 30 cents. There are some terms and conditions. Check out newstalk.com/competitions. Well, now, on Saturday, the 20th of December 2025, Garmin's emergency autoland was used for the first time in a real-world emergency situation. The emergency autoland system is designed to take control of an aircraft in the event of pilot incapacitation and then to safely land at a nearby airfield. Kevin Byrne, a retired Lieutenant Colonel, airport safety and security expert, joins us now with the details. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
So, I've never heard of Garmin Autoland. The business of watches and
fitness, of course,
and
they do a lot of navigation stuff and that kind of thing. But they're also into avionics. And this is a really interesting topic. When I came across it, I really couldn't believe it. We're very familiar with the Beechcraft 200 Super King Air. The Air Corps had a number of them in the 1980s. And two of them are now in service with the Irish Coast Guard as top cover aircraft. And I've actually flown these aircraft myself. They're a wonderful aircraft, really still in production after probably 45 years or so. But this happened in Colorado between Aspen and Denver. And there was a positioning flight involved, no passengers, which was good. Two pilots on board, routine enough. And there was a popping noise and something happened and it depressurized suddenly.
Okay.
And the pilots do what they did. They look at the list and they put their masks on straight away. But as it happened, the Garmin Emergency Autoland fitted to that aircraft. At what price, I don't know. I couldn't find out. But it have activated itself and does a lot of different things. And the pilots sat back and let it work its own way because it's...
But they were still conscious. They were still capable of running the show.
They were well above the... altitude required for oxygen, and they were on oxygen, so they weren't in a hurry. It's a binary system. That means the thing is working fully or not at all, so you can't mess with it after it starts. It did exactly as expected and caused a surprise such that it was on the news then, because when it activates, it chooses itself the nearest suitable airfield, it configures the aircraft for landing, descends it itself, and contacts air traffic control with a synthetic voice, which I thought was extraordinary stuff like that. And it tells air traffic control on the emergency frequency, here we are, we're 37 miles out, we're going to land on your runway 31 in 17 minutes. And the air traffic controller moves other aircraft out of the way and the aircraft flies itself as if both pilots or anybody on board is incapacitated.
Now, the two boys were conscious oxygen, so they're watching all of this happen.
Absolutely. It doesn't just communicate. It actually transponds the emergency code of 7700, which I didn't think you could do. But it's, in other words, a fantastic piece of safety. So it comes in and lands. It makes a final perfect approach using the autopilot and it lands and it stops on the runway and it stops the engine. That's the only disadvantage, because you lose the runway for that particular airport for as long as it takes to get the aircraft off.
Now, presumably the pilots then could start it up again
and they did, and taxi it away. But it hadn't happened before in America. It just proves how safe this thing works from that point of view, because they were in cloud, they were above mountains and they had to be flown into a safe area to land. So it's an extraordinarily modern thing.
People are wondering, okay, if this is completely autonomous within the aircraft or... whether it's externally accessible, because straight away I thought, hack and hijack.
Well, yes, that's a point. It does rely on GPS. In other words, the aircraft has to say, the autopilot knows where we are, where it's going, and it's got to line up on the runway, and that's all done with stuff. It can be done with ground-based equipment, but it's less accurate from that point of view. Hacking, yes, it's probably suitable that they'd have to have some anti-hacking material like that. The other thing is spoofing, as we discussed before. We must be sure that the GPS system in that particular part of the world is not being hacked, or you'll have the aircraft flying into a mountain.
Now, other aviation news. Let's talk about that blowout of a door on an aircraft in Alaska.
We spoke about this, Alaskan Airlines, about 2 years ago is when it happened, and more information has come out. For example, they grounded all the Boeing 737 MAX 9s because the door isn't a door, it's a plug. The four bolts which held it in place weren't there, and Boeing paid $460 million to airlines which had to ground these aircraft for weeks and weeks until they found out that the doors were properly put together. A number of things will come to light. First of all, the aircraft, and I thought it was 14 or 15 flights. Pat, it was 154 flights. Can you believe the aircraft was flown for that time, holding only the door in place of the plug with super glue or something similar? It's an extraordinarily good piece of engineering. But
yeah, no, the point is that some configurations of that aircraft have doors where the plugs are, and that's why they build them in that way, so they can be either or.
Exactly, but this doesn't look like a door because inside is covered up and outside is covered up. It doesn't look like a door, but it is, you know. But the four bolts were never put in. The video of the four bolts put in were never found. Some other things happened. A boy sitting two rows behind the door, with the plug which exploded, had his shirt taken off. Two phones were fired out the door as well and were found working on the ground about 2 days later, as was the door, by the way. The door was repaired and put back into service. But it was an extraordinarily lucky escape from those people who run the aircraft, and very good flying from the
pilot. Now, another aviation spectacle was the taking of the Marinera.
Yeah, extraordinary. And it caught me. I mean, it's becoming routine. This was the third vessel that I saw being taken by these special forces people. But the one off Iceland, the Marinera, caught my eye for a reason. I said, that's very strange. It must be a fake video, because they weren't using the Seahawk helicopters, the big ones that they'd used on the other ship, the other two ships indeed. Why would you use what is normally an aviation regiment, an army aircraft, landing on a ship from that point of view? And I couldn't figure out why, but I did a bit of digging, and it looks as if they had enough aircraft up there to sort out this thing. In other words, there was a ship nearby and they figured using a smaller aircraft, seen, by the way, in the movie Black Hawk Down. It can land literally in the street. It can land on a rooftop. It's lightweight, it's fast, it's nimble. And the troops who sit on the outside on both sides, so they just have to drop off the helicopter quite quickly.
So it's very quick.
Except, why would army people attack a naval or a maritime vessel? They weren't army, they were SEALs. So you had the army supplying the helicopters and the SEALs sitting on the outside and doing what they did quite well. And we also think that the psychological operations in advance, because they released videos of various kind of scenarios on the bases in the UK. Here we are, ready to take you. It looks as if the captain of that ship went into wind to allow the helicopters to land safely and not, you know, be antagonistic. And the video was released, and that's how it worked. So it was a reason. They follow the ship across the Atlantic Ocean using the Coast Guard, which is not illegal in itself, but it's most unusual. So I think it was a kind of a revenge. What would I say? We're going to get you whether you like it or not. So they did surrender an empty ship.
Now, there's been a review of flight safety for 2025.
Yeah, you never get the full figures, Pat, unfortunately, until about the summer of the following year. It's quite slow. But the big ones we mentioned before are, of course, the Potomac accident in January of last year with 64 fatalities. That was a very big, unfortunate item. The next one we spoke about was the Air India flight, which, of course, didn't take off at all and crash-landed and was the biggest and the first fatal Boeing 787 crash. And then there was one that kind of slipped under the radar, pardon the pun, in November. It was an MD-11 cargo aircraft, a very big three-engined aircraft, and it ploughed into the ground in Louisville, Kentucky. The engine actually flew off that, and it's clearly seen on the video. It broke off, and since then they'd been grounding the aircraft and having a look at them. But that caused 15 fatalities total, of which 12 were on the ground. And you have to feel sorry for people working near an airport who were literally wiped out by a fireball, which is what it was then. But apart from that, 27 fatal accidents wasn't too bad, involving 385 total fatalities that we know about. Now, that's 7 fatal accidents among 40.6 million flights. It's a statistical anomaly, basically. It's a tiny, tiny number. 244 onboard fatalities in 24, the year before, and that went up from 23, which only had 72. So you can't work year to year. You look on a sliding scale of 10 years and arrears.
Now, when you look at aviation, because of the vast distances involved,
yes,
it'll always be very safe on a mileage basis.
Yes.
Because, you know, 3,000 miles across the Atlantic and nothing happens.
Exactly.
But when you look at it, even in terms of the number of flights, it's incredibly safe.
It's incredibly safe. It's the safest thing we humans do. Now, it's also true that across different regions of the world, it can vary from place to place. But really, safety challenges are global. They're not isolated to any particular region from that point of view. And the common accident phases are probably ones we know ourselves. The takeoff and landing phases, of course, we're changing energies to and from. We've got human factors and crew response. In other words, I think about 75% of the accidents have a human input. They're not just going to happen. There's a mistake made by somebody somewhere. And then we have operational risks in the conflict or high-risk airspace, places we should not go if there's a bit of a war there or there's trouble or we don't. Like Venezuela, we had the case of the 737 having to stop its climb in clear airspace because there was a US Air Force tanker there. Now, we know what happened after that.
And who knows what will happen in the coming weeks
indeed,
and days. Kevin, thank you very much for joining us. That's Kevin Byrne, retired Lieutenant Colonel, Airport Safety and Security Expert. Now,
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.